Okay, good morning, everyone. Continue our study of and hopefully practice of Emunah. I want to thank our anonymous sponsor for sponsoring in memory of Shendel Gittel Bas Chaim Shoal, who's Neshama Shalem and Aliyah. Please help yourself to some coffee. And some of our snowbirds, I know, are already starting to fly north. So if you're not on the email list, and you'd like, I don't know why they are, because I understand there's a foot and a half of snow on the ground, but...
ice and Muncie,
whatever reason, if you're not on the email list and you'd like to be so that you see the link to the class each week, then please let me know your email address. I'm happy to add you. Also, just a reminder about two events happening this week. Tomorrow night, the new president of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, will be here, and I'm hosting an armchair conversation with him on the future of Orthodoxy. That's at the shul at 8 p.m. Everyone's invited. And on Motzei Shabbos on Saturday night, we are having an event to commemorate and celebrate the successes of the Dr. Yitzchak Belazon Beis Medrash of BRS and the Women's Midrashah, the many classes offered through both with Divrei Torah by Rav David Miller, who is the Rosh Kolel of Yeshiva University's Kolel in Israel, and an incredible kumzitz with Jewish music superstar Simcha Leiner and his backup singer, Dr. Avram Belazon. So thank you. We're grateful to the Belazons for sponsoring. Yeah, the time for the Malava Malka is 9 o'clock.
Whoa.
So,
no, well, 9 o'clock.
Yeah, you know. Okay. What can I tell you? Take a good nap on Shabbos afternoon, and you'll be able to make it. Okay. Nesiva Shalom Yisodei HaTorah Maimer Hei Os Vav. We're in the second paragraph of Os Vav, and we continue to define Dveikus. As I mentioned, each and every week, Emunah is the knowledge that there's a creator, there's a being who brought the world into existence in the abstract. Bitachon is the faith, the trust that not only did he create the world, but he's intimately involved in our lives, and that all that happens in our lives is not chance, is not coincidence, but is by design. Dveikus, on page Samach Zayin, Dveikus is clinging to God. If we know that he exists and he created the world, if we know that all that happens to us is not random or chance, but by design, then I should live with a sense of Dveikus. I should attach myself to him, realizing that he has my back and that whatever I'm going through is he is in control and he can be the source. And the Slonim Rebbe here has gone through a number of different suggestions of how we can grow in our Dveikus. Whether it is Shabbos. Shabbos is a day of Dveikus. We disconnect from the world to connect to him. And Shabbos is not a time to indulge in hedonistic pleasure, or at least not to do that alone, but to also nourish our soul and our spiritual sense, and to be able to retreat from the world, and while retreating from the world, immerse ourselves in Hashem. Shabbos is a time of Dveikus. We also talked about attaching ourselves to Talmidei Chachamim. The Gemara wondered, can you really attach yourself to God? He's an Esh Ochala, God is an all-consuming fire. You try to touch God, you'll burn yourself. So how do you come close to God? By coming close to those close to Him. Attach yourself to Talmidei Chachamim, and one can come close to Him by attaching themselves to those who are already close to Him. And then we also talked about, I think most recently, the notion of attaching ourselves to God's Midos. And that's what we spoke about last week. That if you really love someone, you want to connect with them, then you want to emulate them. Right? You listen to what they listen to, you wear the style they wear, you watch what they wear. You want to be like them. If you want to attach yourself to them, you imitate them. So we do exactly that. We can't necessarily come close to Hashem. He's an Esh Ochala, he's an all-consuming fire. We can come close to him in the sense that we are imitating him. Right? I mentioned last week the idea that when you cook your mother's recipe and you smell the smell of the latke she made or of the matzah ball she made, when you, the gentleman who wears his father's talus each year on Yizkor, each of the Yizkors throughout the year, when you wear or you cook or you follow or you think about or you imitate or you run the Seder with the same tunes that they ran the Seder, when we imitate or emulate someone, we feel attached to them. Even if we can't physically continue to touch them or hold them or hear from them, but we feel attached to them by emulating them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Racham V'Chanun. Hashem is kind and merciful. Hashem is good. Hashem dresses the naked and He visits the sick and He comforts the mourner and He gives charity to the oppressed. So when we do those same things, we are connecting with Him. So we're in the second paragraph, the bottom right, page Samach Zayin. Everyone see where we are? In Yonam Elu HaMavim L'Dveikas B'Hashem. This notion of attaching ourselves to Hashem through purifying the physical. Ein adam kona osam el yadim mesiras nefesh. It comes through effort. It comes through toil. V'lachen yesh b'hem kovach zikuch hachomer. You know, we're living in a world of comfort. We want everything to come easy. When it doesn't, we simply abandon it. We get rid of it. We ditch it. Everything's replaceable. Everything is disposable. Everything, it has to come easy and have to be comfortable. And the notion that, yeah, sometimes you have to work for something and it takes effort and toil and you have to make sacrifices is something which is very lost on our generation, right? If it's not comfortable and it doesn't, it's not compatible, then the world that we live in and the marketing world we live in says, don't do it. Do what makes you happy. Do what comes comfortably. Do what comes easily. Someone... Well, I won't... Never mind. Trying to imitate God and show some discipline. The Torah Matzinu, Shamru Chazal, our rabbis say in Brachos, Ein divrei Torah miskaimim ela b'misha meses atzmo aleha. You can only really acquire Torah, and here I think acquiring Torah is a metaphor or a symbol of personal growth. You can only really grow personally when you kill yourself on it, when you work hard for it. I just finished at the Cup of Joe within the Ramchal, in Mesilas Yesharim, he says the same thing. Hashem designed a world and he put all kinds of obstacles in it. There's an obstacle called Sinaholic. She's not here today. Naomi's not here today, right? There's an obstacle called chocolate cake. There's an obstacle called the snooze button on your alarm clock. There's an obstacle called juicy Lashon Hara. There's an obstacle called Shmiras Anayim, not to look at what we shouldn't look at. There's an obstacle called... There's all kinds of obstacles, temptations, desires, stumbling blocks in life. Why did Hashem create the world that way? I thought he loves us. I thought he wants us to be happy. So why am I not make everything come easy? Why can't all of us have no appetite for anything unhealthy and only just want to eat kale all day? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Kale is disgusting to me. I'm not sure if it was the last edible food on earth I would eat kale. I might prefer to just fade off in the sunset. But why can't we be born with an appetite and a desire for kale and a disdain that chocolate cake should make us nauseous, potato chips should offend us, right? I'm just giving the food because most of us can relate to it. So why didn't Hashem just create a simple world where there's none of these stumbling blocks? So Ramchal says it's the stumbling blocks. You could either trip over them or you can climb on top of them and elevate yourself. You can either fall over them and be low to the ground, or you can step on top of them, they're a step stool, and you discover something about yourself, you become greater. You'd be stagnant, you'd be static. If you just coasted through life and everything came comfortably, you'd just be the same person. But it's through the challenges that we face and the will to overcome them that we discover who we are. How many of us have gone through personal challenges in life that if asked in advance, we'd say, there's no way I could possibly overcome it, but the experience of going through it helped you discover something about yourself, a strength you never knew you had, a tenacity you would never predict was within you. So those stumbling blocks, life would be more comfortable without them, but we wouldn't be... Again, I don't remember whether it was here last week or at the men's shir, but I spoke about the parallel of working out, muscles. We've talked about it before here for sure.
Yes.
That if you don't work out your muscles, the older you get, they atrophy and they die and the body begins to fail. And the more that you exercise and work out the muscles, the more you challenge them, the healthier they are. So you say, well, why? My muscles, working out takes effort. Pushing those machines, attending that circuit training, doing those aerobics, doing the, whatever it is, the cardio, it's exhausting, it's painful, it's miserable, it's boring, it's annoying, everything aches afterwards. Why? Why can't I live in a world where I do nothing, I sit back and do nothing, and yet my muscles just improve and grow on their own? That's not Hashem's world. Lefum tzara agra, according to the effort is the reward. The more we put in, the more we get out. No pain, no gain. In fact, when you work out your muscles, you're actually creating micro tears within the muscle. You're tearing the muscle. And when you tear the muscle and it replenishes itself, that's when the muscle grows. So the neshama and the amunah muscle is also a muscle. And life is one big muscle. And it's when it's challenged and it's torn that it grows bigger and it grows stronger. So, you can't just download Torah into your brain. It takes work and toil and effort and review. And that's true for everything in life. Od amru chazal. Our rabbis also say in Erevin, Ein divrei Torah miskaimen ela im kein mesim atzmo adam atzmo kemidbar. that you cannot acquire Torah unless you make yourself like a desert. Some medrash at the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar as well, that it says the Midbar, that Hashem gave us the Torah, Bahar Sinai, in the Midbar. And the Gemara, Erevin, and the Medrash there learn, why did the Torah Dafka tell us that we received the Torah in the Midbar? What do we care? I care about the topography of the land in which I received the Torah. Why is that part of the memory? Who cares? The answer is, because it's telling us you cannot receive the Torah unless you make yourself a Midbar. Which Chazal said, what does it mean to be a Midbar? It means Kemidbar Hefker. It means that you're like a barren desert. It means that you are a clean slate. You are feeling a sense of dependence on Hashem. Because in the desert, that's the way it is. Gam Kedushas HaShabbos, Ein Ezoch LaHargish, Alayi Dei Mesiris Nefesh, Lizna Er Mikola Inyanim HaChomriyim. In order to tap into the sanctity of Shabbos, you can't experience it unless you make an effort. Unless you awaken yourself to transcend all the physical things here. You know, if you don't prepare for Shabbos, you don't get to eat on Shabbos. It takes Mesiris Nefesh to get ready for Shabbos. And by the way, even if all you do is go to the Grove Kosher Marketplace to buy the food, it took Mesiris Nefesh to earn the money to afford to buy the food. So the point is, you can't just decide on Friday at 5 o'clock, you know, I didn't really give a lot of thought to the fact that Shabbos was coming. And so if you want Cheerios and milk, no problem. You can go with that philosophy. But if you want to sit down to a proper Shabbos Seuda, you got to put in work. It takes effort. But the reward, I personally don't know the reward of having cooked all day Friday or all Thursday night and then seeing your family, your guests. But I imagine it's a very rewarding feeling that you worked tirelessly. You came up with your menu. You shopped. You prepared the food. You heated it up. You set the table. You served it just right. And you see your guests and your family enjoying. And the joy is not that, you know, you got great feedback on your potato kugel, although I'm sure that too is a great source of joy. The joy is that all of that created an atmosphere and it created an environment of happiness and joy and Shabbos and conversation and Divrei Torah and Zmiros. And I doubt that people would laugh and enjoy and sing over Cheerios and milk. So, Shabbos too. That if a person passes away, if they expire on Erev Shabbos, it is an auspicious sign. So you don't get to choose. You don't get to put on your Outlook calendar when you're going to die. So it's nice that we say it's a siman yafa, it's a positive sign to expire on Erev Shabbos. You don't get to choose when you die. Ela maruma shekasher magia erev Shabbos, the Yehudi rotzeh lehikanes leShabbos, tzarech lahamis es atzmo. So it doesn't literally mean that you die on erev Shabbos. Meis be'erev Shabbos siman yafalo doesn't mean just that if someone dies erev Shabbos, it's an auspicious sign. What it means is, if you kill yourself on erev Shabbos, siman yafalo, it's a good sign for you. It's a good sign. If you're willing to kill yourself to make Shabbos, you'll have Shabbos. If you're willing to kill yourself for Shabbos, it's a siman yafalo that your children are going to keep Shabbos, your grandchildren will keep Shabbos. Because they didn't see you kvetch and cry and complain and krechts, I've got to make Shabbos. They didn't see you bemoan, another Shabbos. So, Shabbos. Put the music on, the Erev Shabbos mix. I got whatever, I'm listening to the Rabbi's Parsha Shir. Whatever I got playing in the background, I've got a smile on my face, I'm making Shabbos. Very holy people didn't just make Shabbos, they try to imbue within the Shabbos food a sense of Kedusha. You know, there are, again, I'm not pretending that I can describe this or I'm an authority on it or that I've ever experienced it, but you can have kavanas while you're preparing Shabbos food. You know, you're putting love into the Shabbos food. You're putting the Kedusha. You're putting your hopes and dreams for your family. You're putting, so, you know, you could be on the phone sharing the latest Lashon Hara while you're making the potato kugel. You could. And then the potato kugel has absorbed the Lashon Hara, the negativity. It's toxic. It's contaminated potato kugel. And your children, your family imbibe a potato kugel that has poison within it. Or you could be listening to music, opening your neshama, listening to Divrei Torah, calling every Friday 10 people who need to be checked in on, who are neglected, no one else is wishing them an Erev Shabbos. And then your potato kugel, the potato kugel, one of the ingredients of the potato kugel is chesed, is love. And I know it sounds heebie-jeebie, I know it sounds whatever, maybe irrational, you don't buy it. I believe it. whether I believe it literally that you can put the potato kegel in a lab and you'll discover the chesed of the Lashon Hara, or I just believe it metaphysically. I think there are metaphysical realities. And that's what the Slonim Rebbe is telling us, that Meis Be'erev Shabbos, that Simen Yafel, doesn't mean you literally die. It means if you're willing to kill yourself. Sometimes it's kill yourself to have a smile while making the potato kegel. That was killing yourself. Because really, you wanted to stay in bed. You really had no interest. But you did it anyway. You made your own challah. And in that challah, that's what one of the Hasidic Rebbes, I forgot which, when I gave a shiur on challah several years ago on Simchas Torah, he says that challah was always fresh when Rivka takes the tent of Yitzchak's mother Sarah, and the three miracles, the candle was always lit and so on. So one of them is the challah, from week to week stayed fresh. And I forget which one of the Rebbes talks about that Sarah knew how to have the right kavanas in making the challah, and Yitzchak saw that Rivka too knew how to do that. Do you stand in the kitchen and is it like degrading and demoralizing and beneath you and you wish you weren't? Or do you stand there and say, that's part of my role and I am privileged to have that role? What an honor to be able to imbue the food that my family will eat with a sense of Kedusha and with the midos that I dream of for them. And nullify all of our atzmiyuso. Atzmiyuso means our etzem, our sense of sense, self, our essence. Hanaosav, our pleasure. Hagashmiim lechvodo yisbarach. Kiilu humeis ubatal meha'olam. Are we willing to nullify our own pleasure? Are we willing to make sacrifices and compromises for our own pleasure? V'zei yelo l'simin yafa lova al kedushas ha'shabbos. And this will be a positive sign for you. So, Hameis be'erev Shabbos, Simen Yafalo, if you're willing to kill yourself on Erev Shabbos, it's a good sign for you and your family. It means if you're willing to be mevatel, your sense of self, if you're willing to subjugate what you want to be doing or how you want to be spending that money and invest it in Shabbos, it's a Simen Yafalo, it's a good sign. K'mochein taras amidos, ein ha'adam zochela, ela ayyadei mesiris nefesh. Similarly, when it comes to purifying our attributes, our qualities, growing our character. It doesn't just happen on its own. You don't wake up one day and you wished the night before to be really nice the next morning, and you wake up and you're really nice. It just doesn't work that way. It takes work, it takes effort, it takes toil. Whether it's the interpersonal characteristics or the characteristics that guide our relationship with Hashem, or the third category, which we often neglect. I think I've shared with you before that the Maharal emphasizes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos that there are three spheres, three arenas of relationships. We always talk about two, between us and God, between us and our fellow people, and that's it. But the Maharal says there's a third, Bein Adam La'atzmo, between us and ourselves. Make no mistake, right? You're not schizophrenic if you have a relationship with yourself. You don't have mental illness if you have a relationship. Maybe if you talk to yourself, you have... If you talk to yourself out loud, maybe you have mental illness, right? But the idea that we each have a relationship with ourselves, I think you have mental illness if you don't have a relationship with yourself. You're psychotic if you don't have a relationship with yourself. If you don't have a self-awareness, and you're not in constant conversation with yourself, and you're not regulating yourself, and you're not taking your own temperature, how you feel, what you can do. One of my children recently gave us a lot of pride, told us about a certain circumstance they were in, and in the past, they would have blown up and reacted with a lot of drama, and they decided about themselves, you know, Roa Esanolad, seeing where that would go if they reacted that way, even though that was their impulse, they decided they were going to go a different way, and it turned out so great because they and their friends, everything worked out great. That's a conversation that happened within her own head. That was Bein Adam La'atzmo. That's we all have these relationships with ourselves. When you confront that chocolate cake, should I, shouldn't I, well-behaved, I wasn't well-behaved, I deserve it, I don't, if I have a little bit, I'm going to end up eating more. And you know, hopefully you win the conversation. The right voice wins that conversation. But our entire lives are filled with conversations with ourselves, a relationship. A healthy person is in conversation with themselves. He's trying to self-reflect and introspect and evaluate and trying to chart a course forward, a trajectory they want to be on. So we can't neglect it. The Maharal very beautifully says that all the threes, Pirkei Avos is brought to us by the number three. I've said this before. I just recycle. I believe in recycling. I'm a big Torah environmentalist. So the Maharal, it's my own Chazara, and if you want to listen, you can listen. So the Maharal says, every time you have the threes, you know, three things take a person out of the world, and three things the world stands on, and three this, and three that, and three the other thing, every time three is mentioned in Pirkei Avos, it corresponds with these three relationships. And then you learn Pirkei Avos and try to plug it in. Which one has been Adam Lamakom, which one has been Adam Lachavera, which one has been Adam La'atzmo. So the Mesilas, so the Slan Rebbe here, and the Nesiva Shalom here is saying that everything takes Mesiras Nefesh. Right? So to have self-awareness and to be self-regulating, if it came easy, it'd be a much more functional world. It doesn't come so easily. It's hard work. Ein Adam Zocha L'Taras Amidus, Ela Idei Mesiras Nefesh. Mishum Kach Gimel Gam Eila Mezachim Esachomer Shiyaroi L'Zichos Dveikas Bashem. So here too, if you want to achieve dveikas, it takes effort, it takes work. That's what the Slonim Rebbe is really emphasizing to us. This is a lost art in our time. It's just not a language that we speak, Mesiras Nefesh. To us, Mesiras Nefesh is a dirty word. Why should I have to sacrifice? Why should I have to give? Can't I be happy? Can't it give me pleasure? Can't be compatible with my life? Why do I have to be Moser Nefesh? Why do I have to be Moser Nefesh on I want to think like the whole Western world and Torah tells me to think about it differently. I want to eat what everyone else is eating and I want this, I want that. Young people in particular, you tell them because Mesiras Nefesh. Do you know what your great-grandparents and your grandparents gave up? What you're being asked to give up? You talk about the lack of Mesiras Nefesh, right? It's going to be Purim, it's going to be Pesach around the corner. So now, there's not even the Mesiras Nefesh to make your own salt water. You go to the store and you buy a jar of salt water. So, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Sha'akol Mivara. So, the Mesiras Nefesh, the tremendous Mesiras Nefesh of putting a shtick of salt into a little bit of water, even that Mesiras Nefesh, why should you have to? Just buy the jar at the store. You know, the Mesiras Nefesh of taking 10 pieces of bread and splitting them up and wrapping them up. No, now you buy. They're numbered, they're labeled, they're a whole kit. A whole kit. I'm surprised it doesn't have a GPS on each piece so you could find them. If someone were to lose it, you'd know where it was. Someone gave me a great idea, by the way. Someone gave me a great idea. You should have GPS in every piece of your luggage. There should be a chip. Luggage with a GPS, you'll never ever lose your luggage. Anyway, Grove Mustama has it. Yeah. Probably. I want you to know, I really believe, I wrote an article about this, in Klal Perspective several years ago, that on the one hand, we're living in a time that it's easier than ever to be a Jew. I have my pop-up sukkah, which I just throw in the air and it lands, and it's a sukkah. And I have my salt water, and I don't have to choose my hadassim and aravos. They come in a bag with a badat symbol on them, or my esrog comes sealed, right? Mahadra, mina mahadra, mina mahadra, mina mahadra, and everything is just packaged and sealed and pre and done, and I'm all set. That's our home phone. So, so in the article I wrote, it's easier than ever to be a Jew. You can go to a supermarket in any of the United States of America. Go to a supermarket in any of the United States of America, and you have kosher food galore. You will not go hungry.
That's true.
Right? I don't know that they'll have a kosher deli counter, but if you're talking about products with kosher symbols on them, right. You could have something else to eat every day for a year, and mm-hmm. any supermarket in the whole country, mm-hmm. maybe in the world, I don't even know. I'm just saying, it's easier than ever to be a Jew, and what's the result of that? Assimilation, abandoning Judaism, walking away. Mm-hmm. And I personally believe, with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, and no research, other than my own hypothesis, that there's a high correlation between the two. I think Mesiras Nefesh is a really important ingredient that creates a connection and a bond and a love and a passion and a conviction for something. And when you're not Moser Nefesh to it, and everything comes easily and simply and comfortably and casually and it's compatible, then you have a casual relationship with it and you're willing to walk away from it. So, you know, I forgot the menorah. What about the fact that now you buy the glass, you know, you just break off the top, it's all made. Right? Each of these things, that's a good one. I agree. I'm not pretending that we don't utilize these.
I do that.
We utilize them too. But I'm telling you that my most vivid memories as a child that gave me the greatest sense of, my mother's here, she will tell you, I wasn't, you know, the most enthusiastic, spiritually inspired adolescent teenager, but my memory from those days was chopping charoses with my grandmother, this enormous wooden bowl, and this chopper that came from Europe, and the chopping of the charoses. We have a discussion on Erev Pesach.
or it's,
he wants to use the blender or buy the charosa. I say, well, you can't
do. I remember using the food process growing up, so that's what I did.
How could you do that?
That's my tradition.
Right. So, but those are the memories, right? Making the salt water and everyone having a chore, giving out the 10 pieces of bread. And I still remember having to fill my father the glass with the water and the oil on top and sticking the thing through the greasy disc and then floating on top and enough of the wick standing out and your hands were disgusting and you fight with your siblings. I did last night and that's not fair. I did tonight. It's the eighth night. You'll do the first night. So, but those, that's what gives you the connection, because come the next Hanukkah, that's your memory. Come the next Pesach, that's the memory. That's the feeling. Again, these are not exactly, you know, Mesiras Nefesh of the Crusades and the Inquisition, having to fill the glass with water and oil. But I'm just saying, every generation has their Mesiras Nefesh. So without Mesiras Nefesh, you don't feel a connection. So it's a total paradigm shift in how we look at Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, can be a dirty word. Why should I have to? I want it to come comfortably. I want it to be pleasurable. Or it could be a holy word. Now, when I say it's a holy word, I'm not suggesting that we make things harder for ourselves than they have to be. I'm not saying you have to suffer. I'm not saying you have to sacrifice. You're allowed to buy gefilte fish. You don't have to have a carp swimming in your bathtub. The gefilte fish is allowed to be one color. It doesn't have to be three. Right? I've never seen a green carp or a pink carp. I don't know. Is it different fish in tricolor? Oh, that's why? Okay, what do I know? So I'm not saying that we have to kill ourselves, but I'm saying that when we are presented with when we do confront the need to be Moser Nefesh, don't run away from it and don't bemoan it. Embrace it. Because that Mesiras Nefesh is going to yield a sense of closeness and a sense of affection and a sense of love. And it's going to embed very, very deep memories. Very deep memories. There's a Rav in Israel, Rav Saddam, who's the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mechina in Eli, the founder of the Mechina movement. And the whole educational system he has, the whole curriculum, which I think we need to absorb much more, is talking about Amuna, but also talking about Mesiras Nefesh. He is rumored, I didn't ask him if it's true, but he's rumored to call in Elul every graduate of his Mechina. Wow. They go on from there to the army. And to ask them every year in Elul, his graduates all know the questions coming. What have you done for Klal Yisrael in the past year? Mm-hmm. How are you Moser Nefesh for the Jewish people in the last year? And they know, they've got their Rebbe's image in their mind's eye, and that come the next Elul, they're going to have to answer that question. What committee did you sit on? What stucca did you give? What chesed did you volunteer for? What did you do in the army as a reserve? It could be I raised my children. I was Moser Nefesh. It was a very difficult year with my children. And I decided internally to stay home and work on my children. That was my Mesiras Nefesh. I'm not telling you what the answer should be. But what a shift. What a shift from, you know, everything's easy and pleasurable, and the next expensive, amazing trip we go on with the souvenirs and the memories, and the custodian cleans up for you, because God forbid you should have to throw out your own lunch or snack, to a world where, how are you Moser Nefesh for the Jewish people? Where were you of service? What did you do of service for the Jewish people? So, the Slonim Rebbe, the Nesiv Shalom, is saying, that's true for Dveikus too. You think Dveikus comes easily? You have to be Moser Nefesh. To be mindful and to think about it and to grow in it. It takes effort. It takes work. It takes toil. And you know what? That's great. That's worth it. That will make you cherish it all the more. It makes it all the more special. It makes it all the more beautiful. You don't remember the things you got for free. You remember the things you worked your tail off for. That's what you cherish. That's the memorabilia. Let's start with the next letter. This is his now summary. He's ending this parak. We have to figure out what we do next. So, based on all that we've said about dveikus, that the essence of all Torah and mitzvot is a platform to feel connected to God. Every mitzvah is an invitation to be connected to Hashem. And this is the mitzvah that, in the life of a Jew, it is the umbrella mitzvah over all other mitzvahs in our spiritual and our physical life. I'm about to eat. It's an opportunity to cling to Hashem by saying thank you for this incredible food. I'm about to shake the lulav. It's about to think about the four kinds of Jews or the four parts of my body. I'm about to light the Shabbos candles. Each of these moments, how I tie my shoelaces in the morning to how I fall asleep at night and everything in between, are invitations and opportunities to remember there's a Ribono Shel Olam and to remember He's involved in our life. and to feel a sense of dveikus, to cling to him and feel connected to him and have confidence from him. Dveikus is not a level that anyone is entitled to say, I can't achieve that level, that's not me. It's the essence of everything. It is the dream, the life of the spiritual life of a Jew. And a Jew has to constantly revisit all of the strategies and all of the suggestions about how to achieve it. So now you fulfill the mitzvah of Dveikus. Wednesday morning, 8:45, you come to this house, and we could collectively make a bracha. There's no bracha on Dveikus. I'm not suggesting there's a bracha, but I'm saying hinani muchan umzum and lekayim mitzvahs asay shel Dveikus b'Hashem. We are getting ready. One of the ways that we achieve this Dveikus, we sit here, we talk about it. We have a support group. This is a gym. We're working out our emuna muscle, and we're working on a sense of Dveikus, so that when we go into the week, in between from Wednesday till the next Wednesday, we're living life through a filter. We're interpreting everything with a sense of Dveikus. Oh, look at that. I told last week a few stories. I don't have any good stories for you this week. Which is just means that I wasn't paying careful enough attention. Doesn't mean that Hashem wasn't in my life this week. But every week we could share stories of, what a coincidence. That's such hashkacha pratis. I can't believe that worked out. I can't believe this worked out. What a miracle. I feel so connected to him. I clung to him. It could have gone so many different directions. And by feeling connected to him, it worked out. Lomei Torah kedesh ayideh limudo yizkarev l'Hashem yizbarach. If every act of learning, Lomei Torah kedesh ayideh limudo yizkarev l'Hashem yizbarach. If I had to say one sentence that would summarize what I think needs to change within our Jewish educational system, it's that sentence. It is so important to teach skills of Gemara, Navi, Chumash. It's so critically important that our children gain the skills and the knowledge and the information, Yedias, Klalius, all of those things. But the point of all of that is Dveikus. I think that again, this is Rav Sadan's philosophy. Every single class can yield a feeling of connection to Hashem. So whatever story you learned in Navi, I started Nach Yomi last couple weeks ago when they started with Yoshua. You do one parak a day of Tanakh. It takes you literally no time. You could read it in Hebrew, English, it's on your phone, download Safari. OU sends out a summary every day. It's two paragraphs of the parak. And it's unbelievable because you wake up, you know, through whatever it is, a month after you started it, and you've done Yeshua, Shoftim, and they just started Shmuel. And you're just reminding of these characters. So in school, you're learning a parak of Tanakh, or you're an adult and you're learning it. Every parak of Tanakh you say, how does this make me closer to Hashem? What does it teach me about Hashem's world, about Hashem's leaders? You're learning Chumash? What does Hashem want me to feel based on this? Is what they did right? Is what they did wrong? Did it fulfill Hashem's vision? Did it violate it? You're learning Gemara? How does this make me closer to Hashem? This is Hashem's blueprint for the world. So two people are arguing over a talis. Each one says it belongs to them. What's the halacha? It said that Rav Kook would quote this Mishnah in Bab Metziah. Ze omer talis shaliv, ze omer kula shaliv, ze omer kula shali. Each one says it all belongs to me. The Mishnah says, yachloku. But Rav Kook would add in, v'kadosh baruch hu omer yachloku. Right? That even when you're learning halacha, it's v'kadosh baruch hu omer. That Hashem says. So lomei Torah, when you're learning Torah, kedesh ayidei lumudo, yizkarev l'Hashem yizbarach. So do we ever stop and reflect with our children, why are we learning Torah? Why are we learning Chumash and Navi? Why do you have to know these people and places and things and events and dates? Who cares? Why? Why is that important? Before every class and every class, it should be couched in the context of why. Because as a Jew, all of that yields a greater capacity to feel close to Hashem. All of it is a greater window into Hashem's world, into Hashem's will for us in His world. In other words, it's an assumption that we believe our children understand why they need to learn all that, but we don't often enough, and it's not true children. You go to a Daf Yomi shiur, you go to my shiur, do we often enough say, why does it matter that we're learning this? The Daf Yomi, every day in the Daf Yomi. And why is it important that in the Daf we're learning about that if your ox gored my ox, or that if I damaged your plate, or if whatever area, you know, in some sechtas it's easier than others, learning Avodah Zarah now in the Daf Yomi, so you can understand why you're learning about what not to worship idols and worship Hashem. It's easy to see how that brings you closer to Hashem. But in the other areas of criminal law, tort law, and so on. How does that bring you closer to Hashem? Because that's revealing Hashem's will for this world. The Chazon Ish, we learn the section in Emunah and Bitachon about Emunah and Bitachon. The Sefer Emunah and Bitachon, the Chazon Ish, has one chapter on Emunah and Bitachon. We learned it together. It's on the early, early recordings. But the rest of the Sefer is made up of other chapters. And he has a whole chapter in there about why learn Torah. The Chazon Ish has a whole chapter, why learn Torah. And he says exactly this, because how do you know that, you know, we're arguing over who owns the sweater? Your car hit my car, we're arguing over who has to pay whom. We're arguing over a loan or wages, a dispute over money. Yesterday I got a call. I get these calls all the time. My tenant, landlord, big argument. Instead of going to court, Rabbi, can we come to you for a psak? So these are ma'aseh b'chol yom. These things come up every single day. So what should the law be? So the Chazon Ish says, if man creates the law, the law is fallible. The law is possibly flawed because it's based on your limited perspective of the world. We learn Torah and Halacha because we are learning the omnipotent, divine perspective of the world and of the law. Hashem's version of the law is categorically different than human beings' version of the law. Hashem's version of the law is objectively true. It represents the most just truth. Whereas man's can be subject to interpretation. Different countries and different Supreme Courts have different interpretations of the law. So the Chazon Ish says, we're learning Torah to understand the highest truth and to understand Hashem's will for how to adjudicate and how to resolve each of these different circumstances. So that notion has to permeate our Torah learning. That I'm learning this because I'm touching the divine. I'm making contact with the divine, with Hashem's view of the truth of His world, of what's the most correct, and what's the most just, and what's the most right. That's why I'm learning Torah. That's what I'm making contact with. It's all to reinforce this sense of emunah, of bitachon, of dveikus. That's the entire world. That's what the whole world is all about. So that's what the world is all about. You know, last week's Parsha's Mishpatim, Rav Judah Michel was here. He gave a beautiful shmooze on Thursday night. And I later saw it in another sefer, where it says, the essence, the theme of Parsha's Mishpatim is that outside of Judaism, man makes the law. In Judaism, the law makes man. Right? In other countries, in other peoples, man makes the law. You have founding fathers, you have House of Representatives, Senate, legislative process, a Supreme Court. Man makes the law. For us, the laws make man. When we look at them, we study them, when we observe them, when we keep them, they mold, they fashion, they refine us into man, into the people we're meant to be. Does man make the law or does the law make man? So, Lomei Torah, why are we learning Torah? So that the laws can make the man. Hashem can make the man, and we can't neglect that. And we can't forget that. That is the essence. So, this is what it's all about. It's all about Dveikus. From everything that happens to us to everything we're studying and learning, the whole world is a platform for Dveikus. And we have to use this language and be more comfortable with it. In our world, we don't enough. It's in, you know, now we ascribe it. Jewish action is a whole issue on Neo-Hasidus because there are these, you know, really wacky, fanatical people using these words like Dveikus and Emunah and Bitachon and Neo-Hasidus. But it's not. It's not a fringe thing. Every Jew should be talking about this because that's the essence. Dveikus is a mitzvah. It's one of the Taryag. It's repeated in numerous psukim. Matem advekim Hashem alakechem. Both tibak. It's a mitzvah. It's a pasuk. It's not some fringe new minhag of a new age group. This is what it's all about. And if we want our children to stay true to it, then that's the language we need to speak. And the practice of mesiras nefesh is the walk we need to walk. Again, not looking for opportunities to sacrifice and struggle, but when they present themselves to us, to not bemoan them, but to embrace them. Because by embracing and giving our children those chores, why can't you buy the salt water? Because I want you to make the salt water. Why can't you buy the 10 pieces of bread? Because I want you to take the 10 pieces of bread and hide them around the house. Because that's the way you're going to feel. I want you to chop the charosos. Not you. I want you. I'll chop the charosos if they chop up the drushes. I'll be more than happy to. We divide and conquer. Don't chop the charosos. All right. See everybody at Mirtz Hashem next week.